And bringing on now our promised guest of the evening, Mike Termott, who, through no fault of his own, listen, CBS didn't keep that thing on schedule, Mike. That's why we ran a little bit long. But I have been teasing your arrival. Thank you for joining us, Mike. Everyone, this is the Libertarian Party, a vice presidential nominee, criminal that third-party candidates are not invited to these debates. In particular for us libertarians, having Mike there, you would have gotten, I think, clearer answers, and better policy positions than what you generally heard tonight from both the candidates. Mike, before we get into this almost point by point, welcome to the show. That's the first thing.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. You look well. You are a threat to democracy, John. No, you're a threat. I'm a threat. You're a threat.
Everyone's a threat. Threats everyone's for everyone. There you go. And Mike, please take note. I am wearing my glasses, which is a first for on air for me, which means I must have taken some serious notes. So I hope you were paying attention to the debate as well, Mike. Everyone, Mike Termott, one of our favorite guests.
I was paying attention. And yes. Speaking of paying visual attention, your downstairs studio looks good. It actually reminds me of Chase Oliver's basement there. Yeah. Are you at Chase's place tonight?
I'm not sure. As much as I'm sure I would have enjoyed Chase's company for this show of
well, he's on the road. He wouldn't be there. You could probably use his basement.
I could probably use his place. Yeah, if I was in Georgia, I could probably run over there. No, thank you for the compliments on my basement studio. I appreciate that. But Mike, let's start off because I want to make sure we hit at least the highlights here. First of all, before we get into specific issues, overall impressions of the debate. Do you feel one candidate there handled himself better, worse than the other? Did they both come off about the same? Talk about presentation before we get into substance.
I have to admit, I thought each of them did better than I had anticipated. Mm-hmm. And I usually don't say that. Maybe I'm just a little bit tired this week, and so I'm a soft target. But I actually thought they did a pretty good job. Both came across as thoughtful and articulate.
Yes.
I think it is pretty clear that Tim was right. He's fundamentally not that good at this. He seems a little bit jittery, almost like it was his first time, on prime time under the big lights. But it didn't cause him to say anything dumb. Didn't mince his words. He didn't jumble them up. He came across as being a little bit nervous, but I thought all of that was fairly forgivable.
Right.
I thought he did a pretty good job of making his points. I think he, J.D. Vance did at one point say he's got a tough job, supporting, what Harris has been talking about lately. I think that's true. I think Walz has a tough hand to play. I don't think that's all Harris's fault. I think Tim Walz has been building a bad hand to play for years. I would say the same thing about Vance. I think that Trump has dealt him a difficult hand to play in some regards, and we can get into that.
Sure.
But I thought that Vance did a pretty good job of making his points. He came across, in Vance's case, what he had to overcome is a lot of people find him, I don't know that I have the data to back this up. This is just my general impression. I think he's got a likability problem.
Yes.
He comes across as being a little bit young and glib and, a little sarcasm here, snarkiness there, and maybe, needs to come across as a little bit more sensitive, right? I thought he did a pretty good job tonight.
Yeah, Mike, I was saying that with William while we were waiting. What's interesting to me is as I came into this, I said, okay, just from a presentation point of view, there was a major pitfall there for each candidate, right? One was Vance losing his temper and going off the rails, right? Because he does that a lot, especially, and look, sometimes justifiably, right? With some of these biased situations he's in, but he has to learn to control his temper. And the other one, And the other one for Waltz was saying something, let's face it, goofy, right? Like, yep. That was his biggest pitfall. And yep. I think both of them largely avoided their biggest pitfalls. So absolutely. I agree with you on
that's
that.
That's well said.
Yeah, I think that's what they did. Now, in terms of their policies, I've got plenty to say about those, as I'm sure you do. So let's go through this. We don't have to go super detailed because I don't know how many hours we've got here. But let's start on the topics and then you can.
Well, we should probably wrap it up when the sun comes up. But outside of that, let's roll.
Mike, you and I can talk all night. You know that. We've done it before. Okay. Middle East. The question was basically, look, we've had this situation, breaking news, Iran lobbing all those missiles over to Israel. Israel saying, hey, now you went too far. Some of these actually got through. And the question to both candidates was, do you support, would you support U.S. aid, U.S. Proxy support for Israel should they go on the offensive there? Waltz went straight to crapping on Trump, like saying that he's responsible for destabilizing the area when he was president. But he himself would support Israel defending itself and supports proxy aid, and then claims Trump is unfit to lead in these moments and has an unwillingness to support our allies. Vance talks about him somehow. He started talking about himself and the desire to attain the American dream.
That was a mistake. Yeah, keep going, but that was an error.
And then he claimed that Trump brought stability to the world, claims the Biden administration sent $100 billion to Iran, and said, now this is the sentence, and this is where I think he did his worst during the whole debate, was this opening salvo. He said, the world needs to learn to fear the U.S., and that can only be done with Trump, under a Trump administration, not a Harris administration. Tell me about their responses, Mike, and then tell me what's the correct libertarian response to this question.
First of all, I want to give you kudos for getting the question wrong.
What was that?
I do not believe. Now, maybe I have this wrong. One of us has this slightly wrong. It doesn't really matter, except that it's sort of interesting. I do not believe the moderator said, would you support U.S. involvement in the, but I think that was heavily implied.
Right. It was, I think the actual thing was, should the U.S. support its allies or proxy through proxy, something like that? Not direct. I admit it wasn't a direct. Yeah, and if I misstated,
kind of the way you put it seemed more pertinent. Mm. And I thought that the candidates that someone, I wouldn't really expect this. This is in, you know, la la land. What I would have hoped is that at least one of the, I would hope both of the candidates would jump in and say, the real question here is not a matter of what Israel should do, but is a matter of U.S. policy. Right. And by the way, not just at this moment, but in a long-term sense, because what I fear is that we're going to get into some debate about what we should do today,
right?
Which is not unimportant,
right?
But it makes it seem like everything we've done up until now is really smart. Mm. And I think that we need to recognize that however you feel, and we'll get into all of that in a moment, but however you feel about Israel, however you feel about non-democratic nations in the area, no matter how you feel about the Middle East, you cannot say either that things have gone well lately, nor can you say things have gone on without U.S. government interference.
Correct.
Personally, I believe that those two things are deeply intertwined. I think that we have played a strong hand badly. Mm. I think that we have contributed mightily to how badly things are going. And I believe that someone needs to ask,
right?
You know, why is it that the administration, why is it that the U.S. government in general never says, how are we doing in foreign policy? How are things going? Because I can tell you they're going badly, and it almost doesn't matter what year you're talking about. And I do not buy what U.S. politicians typically say, which is, you know, it's a really dangerous world. And so we need to project power in order to keep a lid on things. Because right. everybody outside of our borders is either stupid or uncontrollably violent, and we're the only smart ones. Really? Right. Really? That's so lucky for us that we have the only politicians on the planet that aren't interested in causing war.
Right.
And empirically speaking, that just doesn't carry any water because we are engaged in military intervention after intervention after intervention, none of which, certainly since World War II, none of which have the American people pointed to and said, yeah, that went pretty well. That was a good idea. Thank you. I'm really glad that we paid. I know it cost my family $5,000, but, you know, that was a really good idea. Those examples don't exist. And so this idea of things having gone well, I think that we need to call that out big time. You know, if you're right. if you're Kamala Harris, if you're a successful politician in the United States at the national level, then, you know, sure, things are going pretty well. Military industrial complex is feeding the beast and you're feeding the feast back. And the reason we call it, you know, this complex is because there's all, you know, the politicians are a player and the military is a player and the industrial complex is a player and the information complex is a player. They're all happy about the way things are going, right? They think things right. are going really swimmingly. They're making a lot of money and they can control what they can control, which is what they want. And when things go awry and they can't quite control it, they can blame it on everybody else.
Right, right. Right.
Other societies are just inherently violent. We're the ones here to protect you.
Right. So Mike,
I just think that's a lot of crap. And so I wish someone would say,
yeah, let's take a hard look at the way things have gone and then make to use some data to make future decisions. Right. But so let me just focus you on two things, one from each side. Waltz basically said, hey, Trump destabilized the area. That seemed to be a big focus of his. He's not a diplomat. People view him as a clown in international affairs, right? That was the thrust of what – he didn't use the word clown, but that was the thrust of Waltz. And Vance, on the other hand, something that, to be honest with you, shocked me a little bit. The world has to learn to fear the U.S., and yeah, Donald Trump is the only one, right? So tell me about those
two specific things. I thought both of those were bad answers in a sense. Yeah. First of all, the idea that the world has to learn to fear the United States. If the world has not learned to fear the United States already, the world's not paying much attention. Like, right. you know, someone needs to set the world's alarm clock because right. we run around killing people all the time. You know, if a million deaths in Afghanistan and Iraq don't cause the rest of the world to fear our military, then, right. you know, they need to update their subscription to CNN. But this idea that Trump is what destabilized the Middle East, you know, I don't buy that at all. That implies that the Middle East was really stable before Trump.
Prior to Trump, right.
Yeah, that ain't true. That it was stable once we got rid of Trump. That wasn't true. And it implies that the Trump administration didn't do anything right. And that ain't true either. You know, the Abraham Accords, I thought, were a great success that I personally would not have given the Trump administration, you know, the wherewithal to pull that off. I was surprised. Yeah. So kudos to them.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I thought that did contribute, obviously not in, you know, a sufficient measure.
Right.
But I did think it contributed to stabilizing the region. I thought that was a good idea. I believe that the United States giving money away to these countries is a bad investment empirically. I think it's ethically problematic to do so with American taxpayer money. I just don't think it works.
Right.
And I think that in some cases, it's actually destabilizing. I think that when you tell, you know, certain of your clients, in effect, that you are our client, right? That you can do anything you want. I think that that changes behavior. And so, you know, I would invite the any administration to ask citizens of the Middle East in any country,
right?
How's it going?
Yeah.
Right?
How's it going?
How is the United States done? You, yeah. Citizens of Lebanon, where right. 1 million people are now displaced over the last week or so. You in Gaza, where almost the entire population is displaced, dozens of thousands have been killed. How are we doing? How are right. we doing? Citizens of Israel, you feel safer than you did a couple of years ago. How are we doing? Are you happy with your administration with whom we've been in bed? You know, how has the United States policy gone for you? Other people in the Middle East, you know, how have we done? I would ask citizens of Iran, you know, how do you feel today?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think it was a lost opportunity for either one of them. Not to sound libertarian, right? I mean, obviously we have political differences, but I think it was their opening question. I don't know if they were that was their parroting moment where they or their peacocking moment where they had a show off their bona fides to their partisan bases. But I thought they both made each one made a bad statement that stuck out in my head.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the whole idea of before I answer that question, let me talk about myself.
Yeah, that was bad. That was very bad. Yeah, yeah. All right, moving on
because
to climate
change. Because you just told us something really important about yourself.
You're right, exactly, that we didn't know about already, yeah. Let's move on to climate change. The advent of Hurricane Helene was used as the impetus for this question, which was basically the moderators asked Vance, is Trump... will he be committed to climate change reform or climate change taking actions to support climate change proposals? So Vance started off by saying he supports clean air and clean water. And then somehow climate change got tied into immigration somehow. And how onshoring jobs and increasing U.S. energy production will produce cleaner energy and help abate this climate change.
Yeah, I think every time JD brought up immigration, his mom left him an extra cookie with the milk tonight. That's okay. My only explanation.
Yeah, you know? Like he brought it in right away, which I thought was strange. I mean, Waltz, I think, did a good political thing where he immediately pivoted to, well, Trump thinks the whole thing is a hoax. And Trump said that this hurricane will result in prime beachfront property. Now, understanding that I'm assuming the latter statement was a really poor joke, but I think politically that was a well-placed little zinger.
Yeah.
But substantively, I didn't hear anything that resonated with me from either one of them. Like, should we take the shackles off regulations to increase domestic energy production? Sure. Solar, nuclear, whatever.
Right, and Vance eventually brought that up.
Yes.
Which I thought was good and smart and good policy. I think that he and Trump, and I wish Walls, I mean, I think that this is what the policy should be in the United States, is that we need an unbiased all-of-the-above policy, that we should deregulate energy development. I think that we need to recognize that the future of energy production in the United States and around the world is going to be nuclear one way or another.
Of course.
I think that Tim Walz needs to learn how to pronounce the word nuclear. It was really disappointing to hear him say nuclear all the time the way.
Well, you know, it's in honor of Jimmy Carter's 100th birthday.
Yes, exactly. And George W. Bush.
George W. Bush, right.
Yeah. So I get all that.
Right.
But if it is true, as I believe that it is, that nuclear is going to play a big role in the future, right. that is the path not only to cheaper energy, but it is also the path to cleaner energy, and not just here, but around the world. And I think that we should be doing everything we can to expedite that process, short of actually subsidizing it, penalizing other forms of energy, or you know, otherwise messing in the market. I think that we just need to get out of the way.
Right.
And we're standing in the way when we subsidize a lot of other dopey ideas. This is why we lag other democracies, not just France, by the way. And, you know, nobody likes to lose an economic race to the frogs. I get that. But.
Whoa, whoa. Frogs or Frenchmen?
Frenchmen. That's what I said. Look, I'm part French, and I love the French, but
okay,
we should be slightly jealous.
Okay.
That, and I am.
Yeah.
We should be slightly jealous that they have done a pretty good job of allowing nuclear energy development, and this is something that we need to see take off. It for costs, for the transition to cleaner energy. For our competitiveness, and yes, for strategic purposes. It is true that you don't want to be dependent on nations that could be a strategic adversary at some point for either the components of what it's going to take to develop energy or the fuel itself.
Yeah. I thought that it was a missed opportunity for Vance not to tout private innovation more and allowing the market to take the lead as opposed to government. Like it sounded to me like he missed an opportunity there, because one of the few overlaps, if you're at least in theory, if you're a conservative, is let the market figure this sort of stuff out. Nobody in Washington knows what's best. Like, as libertarians, we tout that all the time.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
It's one of the few areas of overlap that we may share with conservatives. And I was disappointed that Vance didn't say, like, who Tim Walz knows what's best. He knows where the best solar panels come from. But he also had to work in, hey, we're buying Chinese solar panels, which I couldn't care less where they came from, as long as they
work.
That's
exactly
right.
I don't think it's his center of gravity, John. I just think that it's not JD's center of gravity to talk about markets per se. In that sense, we should be even more grateful that he was at least able to articulate that concept, you know, in the context of energy, because I just don't think it's his center of gravity for everything. Right. You know, he's not anti-tariff.
We'll get into that. That was another one that shocked me.
Yeah,
but
he goes either way, depending on what his boss says, for example.
Yeah. All right. The next topic they hit, and the moderator, I forget which one of the two ladies said this, but she identified this as the number one issue for Americans by whatever polling service they used, immigration. The border crisis is the top issue for Americans. So the question initially went to Vance, and it was, would he be willing to use military to deport illegals? Will families be forcibly split up? Meaning if children were born here on U.S. soil and their parents were here illegally, would the families be split up? Would you deporting all of them? What would it look like to deport 12, 13, 14, 15 million people forcibly out of the country? I have to give Vance credit. He did a two-step around this like nobody's business, never even addressed it in his response.
Yep.
But he did say he did blame Harris for allowing fentanyl into the country.
Yep.
For allowing children to be used as drug mules.
Yep.
And he wants to finish building Trump's wall. And he claims that criminal illegal aliens will be the first to be deported and will, again, he tied it into, will help the economy for American workers and American wages.
Yep.
Walz agreed that fentanyl is a problem. He disputed kids being used as drug mules. He disputed that Kamala Harris is somehow secretly letting them into the country or encouraging them to come in. And he says that, and his big talking point was, hey, we had a bipartisan bill in Congress that that conservatives worked hand in hand with liberals. They were all set to pass it when Trump, through regal fiat from Mar-a-Lago, put the kibosh on it. And then there was back and forth about that.
Yeah.
A, address the immigration issues, Mike, from a libertarian perspective. I know this is a big issue for you. It's close to your heart. And then tell me how they did.
Let me work backwards. Number one, if you're arguing the fate of a bill moving in Washington, you're not winning the debate. I think that Walls was correct. I just don't think that saying, oh, you should have, you know, supported our bill is an argument that's going to rile the passions of Americans who are still awake at that hour.
Correct.
I don't think that either one of them did a great job, considering that each one of them has points that he could make. I agree with you that Vance did make some of those important points, and I thought that Walls didn't do a very good job of contradicting them. Look, I think that Americans in general are more open to a nuanced policy than either side gives Americans credit for. Mm. And I base that on my own conversations with Americans. Now, I have not had a one-on-one conversation with every American. Okay. So my data are as flawed as anyone else's. But I do believe that when people hear our message, they do not knee-jerk think that I'm an idiot.
Okay.
Whereas I do hear people on one side or the other react negatively to hearing what it is that either a Democrat or Republican says on this. I think that they leave themselves open to criticism because they're not willing to recognize that it's a complex issue. And this is what I tell people from the get-go, is that we need to recognize that legal immigration is good for America and let that sink in. And that's for a variety of reasons. It's good for us economically. It's good for us financially. It's good for us culturally as a society. It's one of those things that defines America being culturally what America has become, and for all great, great, great reasons. Especially if you don't hand out, you know, free money as people come across the border. We got to stop that, you know.
Right, okay. Right.
So there are things you got to change about that. On the other hand, illegal immigration is not good for America. And for a number of reasons, a couple of which Vance brought up, is that it invites human trafficking. By the way, on both sides of the border, human trafficking, which has led to horrific stories at huge scale. Shame on me. This is something I did not fully appreciate until I was at the border myself a couple of years ago and talked to law enforcement there. The scale and the difficulty of controlling young sheriff's deputies, because they will chase to stop people from being human trafficked if they have the opportunity to do so against policy. Because, you know, if you're there, if you're a young law enforcement officer, you know, you quickly figure this out, you know what's going on, and you have to, you know, tell people to stand down when you want them to stand down.
Right.
So it's a huge problem, and people are correct to point it out. The other pieces of illegal immigration, and by the way, legal immigration that go wrong, include telling immigrants that they shouldn't be working, making it illegal for them to work. Let that sink in. On how many levels is that a bad idea?
Well, Mike, let me ask you this, because I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did want to kind of focus what you were saying. I saw while the debate was going on, you were live tweeting some stuff, and I saw one guy, one person, I didn't get time to clip it for the show, but I saw one person say, oh, ha-ha, Mr. Pro-Immigration Termot is now saying that illegal immigration is bad, as if somehow you contradicted your policies. Now, I've interviewed you. I've interviewed Chase. You guys have made your policy on immigration perfectly clear to me. But give me a little bit of that nuance that you were talking about, the legal versus the illegal, right?
Yeah.
Like, illegal. So I think the phrase that I hear the Chase Oliver Mike Termot campaign use is, let's have hundreds of Ellis Islands all around the country. Let's absolutely go back to that model of immigration. So on the one hand, absolutely, you're saying illegal immigration bad. That's not the contradiction. What the nuance, though, is you want to see a lot more legal immigration, a lot more Ellis Island style immigration.
I would like to see legal immigration boosted up.
Yes.
As long as it means illegal immigration is brought under wraps. And that's for a number of reasons.
But that's just not semantics that you're saying, right? It's not just a matter of saying, oh, I'm taking the word illegal and replacing it with legal, but everything else stays the same.
There are practical problems with illegal immigration, which include the trafficking we just discussed. It does include fostering the drug trade. Now, you know, we are big believers in decriminalization of the war on drugs. That does not mean that all of a sudden I like the idea of abject fraud, which is what the fentanyl trade across the border is all about. Let's call it what it is. I was a cop for 11 and a half years. I am not willing to say that people bringing fentanyl across the border are, you know, serving some robust, healthy market, with the benefit of our children in mind. That's not what's happening here.
Sure.
It's fraud. It's deadly. And it's killing our kids. So, you know, we shouldn't have any tolerance for that. The other problem is that it brings people into the United States without vetting. And Americans expect, and this gets into a practical issue, and it gets into a political issue. Because Americans expect there to be some vetting as people come across the border, and they're not getting it. It makes Americans naturally leery, right, and pessimistic about immigrants and immigration writ large. It is what gives oxygen to the Donald Trumps of the world who would paint immigration as being bad, right? In other words, if you had a perfectly secure border and there was no such thing as illegal immigration and everyone was vetted and you had a perfect system for vetting people as they... You know, imagine this is a thought experiment. Americans would be much, much more comfortable with the idea of immigration. They would know that everyone had, you know, cleared. So the political aspect of this is not unimportant. This is actually quite significant. But the other piece of it is that you're bringing people in who are going to work for pennies on the dollar.
Yes.
This is what undermines the wage rate and the entire wage structure in the labor market is people willing to work for pennies on the dollar because they have to.
But so let me mine this a little bit. I hadn't planned on going this deep, but let me just mine this a little bit. But the solution to that is not legislation, and it's not keeping out people who see, to me, I've always said, the best kind of immigrant is the one who is so poor, so desperate to change his life, change her life, have the courage to leave wherever they are in the world and say, my hope for a better life is in America. And that's where I'm heading to make my fortune, to better
Absolutely.
Myself. Right?
Absolutely.
So for those people, a lot of times it is coming in. And if you didn't have the silliness of a minimum wage law, if you didn't have the silliness of illegal immigrants and having to sneak across borders. Yes, a lot of these workers would come in and accept lower wages, but that's just a start, right? They would start,
right?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the problem is that we've created a situation where it's illegal for them to work, and so employers know that they can pay them pennies,
right?
And get away with it because, you know, these people have so few options.
Correct.
And, you know, it's a black market. We know the black markets are dangerous, that black markets in some cases kill people. And we do not want labor markets to be managed this way. It's not healthy for anybody. We should be encouraging people to get to work as soon as they cross the border. And think about the signal you're sending the world, you know. It's okay for you to come here, but, you know, don't even think about working.
Yeah.
Okay. This is like what a recruiting marketing plan to bring in lazy people. You know, is that the kind of group you want to bring? It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And Mike, we have a quick question here from William Del Pilar. He says, didn't Vance bring up more legal immigration using HB visas as an example? as well as bringing in immigrants that have an education to do jobs. So what's your response to that?
He did. I don't remember exactly the words that he used. You know, he does have this instinct, right? I believe this political instinct that there's nothing inherently untoward about immigrants. You know, he seems lurking underneath all that Trumpian exterior. He does seem to understand that in every immigrant deep down inside lies a human being. He just doesn't want to be caught admitting it inside the Republican Party. I think that that's a real shame.
That's an interesting point you brought up. Do you feel that at times? So with Walt, you get the impression that he's all in on this leftist progressive agenda. Like he's not falling in line for political gain. He's not falling in line because he's an admirer of Harris personally. He believes this stuff for better or for worse. I think he believes this progressive agenda. I don't know.
I think he came right out of the box in the Marxist training program. Yeah, I agree.
I find that very easy to believe about Walls. However, with Vance, I kind of get the sense that I think you said it right. He's fighting against at times he almost has to stop and remember, like, oh wait, how do I phrase this that doesn't offend my boss? Right. Like how do I?
So like immigrants bad, markets good,
right?
But tariffs good. Yeah.
So that's an interesting point. I kind of noticed it myself, but I didn't know if I was being too biased against him. But it did seem at times like he wanted to say, yeah, all right, we really can't get rid of 15 million people by force.
Well, we're not going to, which is right, why he immediately said, well, we would, you know, deport criminals illegal. For, I don't remember.
Criminals. Yeah.
For this idea. And look, if Trump, in fairness to JD, it's sure. Donald who's pulling this string. If Trump would say, we should not be allowing convicted criminals.
Yes.
Convicted felons. Let me choose my words carefully. If he were to say, we should not be allowing convicted felons who are not citizens of the United States to be in the United States, I would think that that would be a pretty powerful position. I think a lot of people would, you know, I mean, you know, I would be sympathetic to that idea. Well, sure. You know, if you're a criminal,
right,
and, you know, you're here from Finland and you committed a crime, we caught you with the crime, we gave you a trial, you were convicted, it's time to go home. Right. I think a lot of people would be sympathetic to that. And if he right. would spell it out in that way and say, okay, you're here as an immigrant. Frankly, I would say it wouldn't matter if you're legally immigrated or illegally immigrated to the United States. If you're not a citizen, right, and you've been convicted of a felony and Donald Trump wants to deport you, I think he would get a lot of support for that idea.
Sure,
but they don't say that. They make it seem like they hate people who are immigrants. Now, they haven't said that. That was a little unfair. But that's the vibe they give, well, rather than a vibe that said they don't like crime.
Right, which used to be the Republican, going back to my youth, Mike, that used to be the Republican position, right? So they did not object to immigrants. They objected to Castro emptying his jails into Florida, right? There's a difference there, right, that Republicans back then could easily define. But now they have that trouble, and the Democrats do as well, because I think they're 100% on the anti-immigration train right now. The Democrats, they're just a little less vocal about it because they still think they're farming their votes, right? But if, down the line, especially, right? So I think that's a very key thing that he doesn't say we're getting. So Vance did, though. I give him credit. Vance kind of distinguish himself a little bit from the Trumpism, as you put it, because the Trump position is we're getting rid of these 15 million. The crime is the immigration itself. And he's right. not distinguishing between whether or not they were murderers in their home country and they're coming here. Right,
which is why he says they're sending us their bad people, because he's trying to tie all illegal immigrants to criminals. And I think that he would probably be okay even tying legal immigrants to criminals. He doesn't seem to draw a huge distinction there. And I think one of the problems that libertarians have with denigrating illegal immigrants, right? And no one is suggesting that the United States shouldn't have a border policy, right? Well, some people would just say, you know, we need a completely open border, a border that doesn't in effect exist. There is a robust argument for that, but that's not on the modern table. What I personally have a problem with denigrating illegal immigrants.
Right.
I don't even like the phrase, but let's continue to use the phrase because it's du jour.
Mm.
The problem that I have is that it's exactly what I would do. And I don't think that that makes me a criminal, right? Now, you can call me a criminal. So I guess it makes me a criminal, but it doesn't actually make me a bad person,
right?
If I were living in Central America, I'm pretty sure I'd be making my way to the Mexican-American border, right? And I think I'd be bringing my family. I'd be the guy that was, you know, I'd be boosting John up the wall, get your ass over there first so that I can throw my kids over there so you can catch them, right?
I was going to say it might be the other way around, Mike. I think I got a couple of puns on you.
We'll see how that plays out. How that plays out. But don't tell me you wouldn't be doing the same thing, because of course. I think you would be. And so in some sense, I think that our nation bears some responsibility in this situation, saying that we don't want people coming into the United States illegally and then doing nothing about it is speaking out of both sides of our mouth.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you might as well be saying you don't want the ocean to rise a high tide on your property, on your beachfront property. You know, you can pass a law against it if you want, but that's just, you know, unless you're willing to build a seawall, that's, you know, God decided there are going to be high tides and low tides, and no amount of legislation is going to change that.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, once you have 15 million, and I know it's actually a bigger number than that, once you have these millions of people in the United States that are undocumented, that came across in a fashion that we call illegally, once you have them here.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? They did what you would do. They did what I would do. Now, we can jump up and down about it, but this idea of, you know, they're criminal, they've done something horrific, I'm sorry, that's just not true.
Right.
And so you're going to have to come up with a humanitarian solution in a way that, you know, goes beyond your lack of humanitarian solution at the border when they came in.
Right. Give them a quick expedited path to citizenship. If they take it, they can stay. If they can't, then maybe you deport them. But
what I didn't quite understand, maybe you need to educate me. I didn't understand, maybe there's a nuance to the question that I didn't comprehend. Why is it so difficult to say, no, we don't forcibly separate family members?
I don't know. They were too busy trying to pin it on each other's bosses. You know, So, it was like, it would have been easy for Vance to say, and I think he wanted to, but I think this is one of those times where he couldn't. I think he would say, of course, I don't advocate families getting split up at the wrong end of an AR-15 or an M4. You know, it's
right.
Like,
there's nothing more sacred than a family.
And especially for Republicans, you would think that would be part of their family values thing.
Absolutely.
And he had a golden opportunity to say that, and he didn't. But
in worst case scenario, if you have someone who's not a citizen, right, here illegally or legally. Well, let's say worst case scenario, they're here illegally.
Legally.
They've committed a crime. It's been adjudicated. They've been deported as ordered by the court, and they have a family here. We will support the idea of them leaving the United States with their family. We're not going to argue, no, you can't bring your kids because they're U.S. citizens, and then sue to have the kids domiciled here and have the, you know, state parents of Arizona take over your family. That is not going to happen. No. I mean, please, Lord. Why can't Vance just say, worst case scenario, someone gets deported, they have a family, we are going to support keeping that family together? That should be an easy throwaway. Now, maybe that's not what the moderator meant by the question, but at the very least, it was an opportunity for Vance to say something he didn't.
Well, he could have also just humanized the whole process for Trump, and he didn't. Okay. Mike, I'll give you a heads up. We only got about 10 minutes because our conservative staff is waiting to do their take at a couple. So I want to just give you these. We'll speed through them. I'll hit the most important
lightning
ones.
Round. I apologize.
Lightning round. Okay. Reproductive rights. I think this was the next major hot button topic that these guys had to address, right? The claim that Trump, the moderator says, well, Trump's going around saying, like, hey, even in the ninth month, Tim Walz and the Democrats and Harris are going to let you have an abortion right up until the kid comes out. Vance agreed with that. You know, like, you know, he said, yeah, that's what they're doing. Walz said, no, that's not what the law says in Minnesota. But then he never really clarified what the law.
He didn't clarify. I thought that was nuts. Either a missed opportunity on his part or.
It's true. I don't know. He just kept saying it's been fact checked. And I thought that was a strategic mistake. He should have either denied it or owned up to it, one or the other.
Unless it was a strategic victory and his policy really sucks and he's trying to obfuscate.
You know, I haven't read the law, but maybe you're right, Mike. Maybe that's the case.
I don't know, but that was the impression that I was left with, is that his policy is, you know, we're going to let you do whatever you want until day 270.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like talking about it, so I'm just going to, again, pin this on you don't understand the legislative language and try to wriggle my way out of it. That's the impression he left us with.
I agree with you, but here's the other one. He kind of counterpunched a little bit by saying, hey, these Republicans in their Project 2025, and I thought it was a good way to kind of throw that little missile in there, they're going to have a federal abortion registry. You see, they're going to monitor who's pregnant, who's getting, you know, and all that, which Vance denied, but not too vehemently. So give me your impression.
He denied that a little bit harder. Good for him for denying it. The other thing that he should have said, and this is what I have said, which is I don't like Project 2025. But what I really hate is someone lying about it. And Walz continues to lie about it by saying that Trump and Vance support it, and they don't. Mm.
They don't support Project 2025, but you know, I guess politically they're just trying to tie Trump, which again, politically is fine. As long as you said they don't outright lie about it, they're trying to say like, look, this is part of Trump's inner circle. These are the people he talks to. These are the people he appeals to. Look, for libertarians, we might say the same thing about the New Hampshire folks, right? They've got some wacky ideas out there that go beyond the Free State Project.
I think
that's
a good analogy.
Right? So if William, my partner on the conservative side here at Grumblings Media, whenever he wants to get under my skin, he goes, yeah, did you see what Kaufman said? All you libertarians think like Kaufman, right?
Well, okay, but then you've got to say in a more forceful way than J.D. Vance did, hey, those knuckleheads, they don't speak for me. If you're going to have a debate with them, you know, do it on a different different night.
And that should have been something that Vance should have jumped on. I agree. Good for him for saying no, but in actuality. And very quickly, give me the 30-second Oliver Termat position on reproductive rights in the U.S.?
Well, number one, the federal government should not be involved. Number two, we want state governments, yes, to make legislation for their own states in every case, because, you know, Vance did get this right. There are important cultural differences. As libertarians, we believe in as absolute light a touch as possible from the government. Having said that, you know, people are going to have to come up with the rule that best suits their individual state's culture, right? And it should not be for the federal government to dictate. My personal prediction, and what I would personally be comfortable with in the long run, by the way, but my personal prediction is that in the long run, and I'm not even sure what I mean by that, 20 years, 40 years, 60 years, states will coalesce around the idea of the demarcation point being viability. I think that that's the only point of demarcation that carries a little bit of water in terms of logic and conveying rights to the child, that once you reach viability, you've earned a shot at life.
Yeah,
and, but short of that, I just don't see anything standing up. For those of us who are, let me give a shout out to my conservative family here. For those of us who are conservative in this regard, who are personally pro-life, you know, people who are pro-life, they need to make this case in society, in our culture.
Right.
I don't believe in shortcutting and using public policy or the force of government to make your case for you.
Yeah, agreed. Guns. Let's move on to that. From abortion to guns. Very quickly, if I'm boiling it down, Vance's position is leave the guns alone. We have a mental health crisis in this country. We should be addressing that. Walz gave what appeared to be a very sincere story about having his son witness a shooting, which I came out of nowhere. I was not aware of that. And I think you could even see Vance in his head say, A, I think he was actually moved by it from body language. And B, he did the right thing by saying, I was not aware of that. You know, my heart goes out to you and your son.
I thought they both did the right thing in that regard.
Right.
But I don't think it's responsible for Democrats to denigrate the idea of hardening the target that a school is.
Right.
We can disagree on gun control, right?
Yeah.
I've got a problem with gun control from a constitutional point of view, from an ethical point of view, and empirically speaking, I just don't think that this stuff works.
Right.
But however you feel about gun control, I don't think it's responsible to try to win the gun control argument by saying, no, we shouldn't be hardening schools.
Yeah, that's nonsense. And to some extent, I don't think Walz actually said that. He just avoided that. And I like there was one thing that I think
he did say, you know, do you want your schools to be
prisons or something like that?
Something like this. Yeah. I didn't think that was a good thing to say.
No, he didn't. But I will say he did have a weird sentence that I jotted down and said, he said, stop stigmatizing mental health issues. Sometimes it's just the guns, which was a paradox of sorts. Like on some level, I agree with him. Okay. Yes. Even if you agree that there's mental health issues, stop stigmatizing it. Not everyone with mental health issues is a violent criminal. I agree with that. But then sometimes it's just the guns, that falls back on a very liberal trope that is for gun grabs and stricter gun control more than some. So I thought that was very strange, and I didn't think that was a good point.
It was strange, and I get why he said it, but it came across as dopey. And if I spend any more time thinking of it about it, it'll just seem increasingly dopey.
Your head will spin. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Now I'm not going to bother telling you what they said because it's in detail, but with the issue of housing prices, how to bring them down, Walz started touting Harris's communist giveaways. You get a free $25,000 down. We're going to make sure Goldman Sachs can't buy any more houses unless they're living in them. Blah, 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 blah. And while Vance said, again, he blamed illegal aliens for housing crisis and prices, and says, if Harris wants to do something about it, she's in office now. Why doesn't she do something about it? I think both those were weak, quite honestly, and just politicking.
Horrible. Like,
how do we bring, I know the answer to this. I'm not too ashamed to say this, but Mike, why don't you tell us, as a good Austrian economist yourself, what is the way that housing prices come down and housing shortages are abated?
Well, look, there's a few things wrong with public policy in this area. I thought it was interesting. I got to give a prop that Vance did get one small thing right when he talked about the fact that a lot of land was not available for housing development. That's true. The larger problem is at the local level, though. Zoning of land use is actually a bigger problem. Ask anyone that lives anywhere near San Francisco, right?
Right.
That drives up costs insanely. That's a huge problem. And so do, you know, other regulations. But housing prices are driven by the same thing that drives inflation and the rest of the economy. You've got the government spending too much money in general and the Federal Reserve buying up all the debt, monetizing it, not all of it, but a large proportion of it, monetizing it and creating right. money willy-nilly. This is what drives inflation in general, and particular in a hyper way drives cyclicality in the price of housing, which is a huge problem. The idea of just, you know, I no longer have any friends that work for Goldman Sachs, so don't get me wrong. I really don't care about them personally, but the idea of precluding them or anyone else from buying houses with some weird rule that says you got to live in it. What if you buy a certain number, you're right. not going to be allowed to buy houses. Like everyone gets to buy one for themselves and one to rent. All you're doing is limiting people from bringing capital to the housing markets, which is completely bass ackwards from what you want to do to develop these markets and right. boost supply.
Yes. Pardon. Let the market rule. Once again, the market will solve all these issues for us.
It will. And much better if you keep your nose out of it and not do something completely. It's not just that Walz's idea is not very good. It's backwards. It would yes. drive up the price instead of down.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. All right, Mike, unfortunately, as much as I said, and I'd love to have you back. If you want to come back later in the week, we could do a further expansion. But my conservative friends are going to burn down the house. And you know, Mike, they've got all the guns, I think. So I gotta be careful around
here.
Yeah,
but I'm going to get a cannon for those pirates that come up my creek.
You mean libertarians have no problem with people owning their own bazookas and tanks? Yeah, well, this is why.
I truly don't have a problem with it as long as you're responsible for your behavior. And the same thing goes, by the way, right. memo to Tim, it is not illegal to shout fire in a crowded theater, but that's another conversation.
That's a free speech conversation. Everyone, thank you to Mr. Mike Tremont, the Libertarian Vice Presidential nominee, for joining me here again. As always, Mike is a wonderful guest, always willing to come on and talk issues and have some fun. Mike, please tell the people, how can they contribute to the Chase Oliver?
VoteChaseOliver.com. You can go to MikeTremont.com too, but it's harder to spell because there's two A's in Tremont. So yeah, you can go to MikeTremont.com. But go to VoteChaseOliver.com. It's a little bit easier to spell. Make a contribution, get involved, and I can tell you every dollar we stretch, we're not one of those campaigns that's swimming in dough, and therefore, you know, we'll take your $500 and do something stupid with it. That's not how this works. We use money to make our little payroll and help get our message out, keep us on the road, spreading that message. That's what every penny goes to.
Absolutely. And once again, thank you for joining us here with Mike. Mike, thank you once again for joining the show. Everyone, stay tuned. In about 10 minutes, the Fired Up crew is going to be right here on Grumblings Media, and there's going to be four, count them, four diehard conservatives telling you why J.D. Vance destroyed Walz in tonight's debate. They're not like me and Mike with no horse in that race. Vote Mike Tremont. Vote for Chase Oliver. And until next time, everyone, peace out. This has been Big John right here on Free For All on Grumblings Media.